Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks so much for listening to Connecting Faith. Programs like this are possible thanks to listeners like you. You can find out more about supporting Faith Radio on our website, faithradionet.com.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Rathmanner in for Neil Stavem today, and I'm excited to be here today because we get to spend a little bit of time talking about marriage and parenting and maybe even a little bit about romance, which is always fun, especially here after Valentine's Day. As always, our goal in Connecting Faith is to find ways to help connect faith to our everyday life, and today is no exception. We'd love to have you join in on the conversation as well, but first, we get to talk with Jim Burns, Dr. Jim Burns. He's president of Homeward and executive director of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University. Jim speaks to thousands of people around the world each year and has over 1.5 million resources on marriage and family in print in over 25 languages. We're just going to concentrate on one, though, here today. Jim's radio broadcast is heard on over 800 stations a day and heard around the world via podcast on homeward.com. And he's written several books. Some of his recent books include Faith Conversations for Families, Teenology, The Art of Raising Great Teenagers, Confident Parenting, and the one we're going to talk about a lot today is Creating an Intimate Marriage. Jim and his wife, Kathy, and their three daughters live in Southern California, which makes me a little bit jealous today. Welcome, Jim.
Joe, great to be with you. I actually laughed out loud when I heard your weather broadcast right before you came on. I just apologize on behalf of all of us Californians in shorts and a t-shirt today.
I know. Well, there are a couple of weeks every winter where most Minnesotans do say, what in the world was I thinking? Even though most of the time I do love living here, there's just those February weeks that seem to go on and on.
Well, you know what's interesting, though? I say sometimes just the opposite. When I'm in a place like Minnesota, I speak to kids. You know, my background was speaking to kids, about 250,000 of them a year. And now I spend more time with parents. But I often say those kids are just a tad bit more innocent. They sure have the same problems that, you know, we have out here or any other place. But it's a great place to raise children. And sure, you got to put up with a little bit of cold weather. But it's also a really, I think, a more healthy environment than some of the other places in the United States. Frankly, I say that all the time about the dear place you guys live.
Well, I'm going to take that today. I'm going to stick it in my back pocket and keep remembering it as I'm putting on my layers.
Layers. I'm unfamiliar with that term.
Yes. Oh, goodness. Well, Jim, I was excited to talk to you because I've been kind of poring over your book, Creating an Intimate Marriage. And here a week after Valentine's Day, you know, the big romantic gestures have been made. The chocolates are kind of dwindling. I know that's true in our house, at least. This large box has a few of those straggling ones that no one really wants to eat. And maybe the flowers are wilting, but it seems like creating an intimate marriage has a lot more to do with the process of the rest of the year and not just with those romantic gestures. Is that true?
Yeah. Well, you're right. And actually, those romantic gestures are wonderful, but it's what happens the rest of the year. And unfortunately, a lot of times we're really intentional about Valentine's. Not everybody, but, you know, I sure am at my house and Kathy is. And yet, you know, we need to do this on a regular basis. And it doesn't just have to be the chocolates and the flowers. It has to be, you know, being intentional about, you know, connecting. You know, we talk about intimacy and really intimacy. You know, women get this better, Joe, than men. You know, intimacy is more about connecting. And for men, they think intimacy is physical. And it is. There's an element of that that's very important and wonderful. But at the same time, it's connecting. And, you know, you don't just connect on Valentine's Day. Unfortunately, we want to, you know, connect. Well, not unfortunately, but you want to do it all year. And unfortunately, a lot of times people are, well, they just get too busy and preoccupied and distracted. And unfortunately, we've got a lot of people who say that they're not, you know, connected.
Well, I was reading just about some practical ways to do that. And one of the chapters that really spoke to me, I think it'll really speak to a lot of people listening today, is your chapter on a sense of awe in your marriage, A-W-E. Yeah. Can you tell me what do those letters stand for and how can couples practically walk that out in their marriage?
Right. Actually, I'm looking at the letters ah, because I have it by my phone. I want to treat people like that, but especially my wife and my children. Ah stands for affection, warmth, and encouragement. And, you know, a lot of us were raised on what we call shame-based parenting, and boy, we do that with our kids when we're in trouble with them, or when we're not in a good place in our marriages. We, you know, we bring in conflict and we do so much of poor habits. So ah stands for affection. You know, it takes, I just saw a study, it takes 8 to 10 meaningful touches a day for someone to thrive. And unfortunately, a lot of marriages are affection starved. And I'm not even talking about just sexual affection. I'm talking about, you know, non-sexual affection. And I find that that's just a critical element to a good marriage is affection, putting deposits in. And it is sometimes doing the special things, the flowers or whatever, but it's also just in being warm and caring. And that warm brings up the next one. Warm is harder to understand, but warm is setting the tone in your home. You know, if you have a thermometer, especially today where you live, or if you have a thermometer, if you have, somebody was sick, you're going to react to the thermometer. But if you have a thermostat, you know, you're going to have to put that temperature up to make it comfortable. Mm-hmm. And I find that a lot of people almost get lazy. And in our homes, I think we set more of a relational temperature by bringing warmth into it. And I always say one person can do that. If, you know, one person's negative or one person's grumpy, then somebody else can bring that person along by being very disciplined on that. And even on days when, you know, when things aren't always going right. I mean, when you have your little kids, you know, there's chaos in the house, obviously. But at the same time, I think we can do that. My mom was very intentional, and she taught me how to be intentional. You know, craziness with four boys and a husband that definitely was not on the, you know, Billy Graham assistant scale in terms of how he lived his life. But my mom was able to bring warmth into the home, and so we were drawn to that warmth. And I'm talking not about the weather, but about, you know, how you deal with that. And so I would try to do that in my home. And Kathy, I know, does too. And then encouragement. I love what Mark Twain just said. I was just in Hannibal, Missouri, and I was reading some quotes by him, and he said, "I can live 2 months on one good compliment." And again, I think we compliment our colleagues and our friends sometimes more than we compliment our spouse. And I know I'm being very proactive this year. It's kind of my goal to be much more of an encourager to Kathy. And we actually have a little thing that our daughter, Christy, who's getting married in May, made for us, and it says, "I love you because," and it's inside kind of like a picture frame, and you can write. And so, you know, Kathy writes, you know, February 18th, and she says, "I love you because, you know, you keep giving me grace." Yesterday I said to her on this little thing, "I love you because you're one of the most generous people I've ever seen, and I'm always inspired by you in that manner." Little things, but what it's really funny because we've just been doing this for a little while. But this idea of encouraging, sometimes it's easier to write it than it is to even speak it. But if a relationship is built on awe, and I'm not saying that you don't have you know, problems and issues, and sometimes you got to, you know, take one down here in terms of having a big conversation and a deep one. But if you develop awe in a relationship, it's going to be a much more effective relationship. When it comes to communication, see, a lot of times we only talk about the negative stuff, but I think we can fill in with affection, warmth, and encouragement, and all of a sudden some of the negative stuff will just more or less drift away. One of the phrases that's not in Creating an Intimate Marriage, but that I talk on quite a bit now is, you know, words don't always connect, but connection times cause you to have better words. So that's where there's friendship and fun. And, you know, Kathy and I don't like to sit at the kitchen table and talk about where our relationship is going in a bad way. And that's never been a positive thing for us. We've done it, believe me. But when, you know, we were for our Valentine's Day, we went away for 2 days. And again, living in Southern California, it was 80 degrees. And, you know, we went bicycle riding and we, you know, walked and we had long walks actually on the beach. We were in the San Diego area. We had some fun dinners. And none of it was all that expensive. But it was with us kind of playing together. I'm amazed at how much actual talking and connection we had. But it was because we went out of our way to, you know, to make that happen. And we say, and you said you were reading the book, we say in Creating an Intimate Marriage, we have a high maintenance marriage, so we've got to work at this stuff. Some people maybe can get by with not doing it, but for us, it's got to be intentional, and it's what's made our 38 years of marriage much more effective.
I did giggle a little bit when I was reading about you calling your marriage a high-maintenance marriage. Sometimes they say I might be a high-maintenance wife, and I like that phrase a lot better, that it's our marriage that actually is high-maintenance, that it takes both of us to be intentional about what we're saying, what we're doing, what we're writing down.
Yeah, well, you're right. Some of us can be probably more high-maintenance. My goodness, high-maintenance. My next-door neighbor has a Corvette that's a 1974 Corvette. Now, anybody who likes cars goes, oh, my gosh, that's impressive. I'm not a car guy, so I'm now impressed because I've lived next door to him for 28 years. But, you know, it's a high-maintenance car. It takes a lot of work. Well, you know, it's an incredible car, but you got to keep working on it. And I think a lot of times, even with a high-maintenance marriage sometimes there is, you know, one or other who's a little bit more high-maintenance, you know, there's a gem in there. It does take more energy, more work, more intentionality. You've got a guy up in your neck of the woods. His name is Willard Harley, and he's an incredible writer. He wrote a book called His Needs, Her Needs years ago, and mm-hmm. it still continues to influence people. And I was interviewing him on my radio show a while back, and he said that a good marriage, you need about 15 hours of investment within a week. And I honestly laughed because I thought he was kidding. And I write books on marriage because I went, I don't know anybody who does that. And yet what he was trying to I don't know that he even believes you can spend 15 hours working on your marriage. But what he was trying to say was, you know, let's move it over a little bit. Let's spend more energy there. And way too many couples, Joe, and you know this, and it sure has been Kathy's my time with our high-maintenance stuff sometimes, is we tend to have a child-focused marriage where mm-hmm. we spend our time with our children because they're needier or whatever. And all of a sudden we wake up one day and we go, wow, we've got a business relationship, you know, with each other, and we're now almost needing a computer printout on what we're going to do with the kids and how the schedule goes, as opposed to really taking the time and the energy. And I think that's what you do with a high maintenance marriage. And I'm grateful that we learned a long time ago that for us, a non-negotiable date night, not out every night of the week, and actually Kathy has veto power over my schedule. Those decisions we made so long ago have really helped us have some boundaries that, you know, give us more, you know, time to, you know, focus on each other. And yet again, it's this breathless pace in which we live our lives. It's so tough for everybody.
Jim, that's great advice. I'd love to talk a little bit more or hear a little bit more about this child-centered marriage and how some people are in that stage, especially if we have school-aged kids. It's a situation a lot of my friends are in, certainly. Love to talk a little bit more about that, as well as what about other stages? If you're a newlywed or maybe you're an empty nester, what are some ways we can create intimacy in our marriage? So we're going to take a break right now, but we'll be back in just a few minutes. My guest today is Dr. Jim Burns. He's an author, speaker, and executive director of Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University. And we're talking today about some of the ways to create intimacy in our marriages and how to connect your faith in this process as well. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back to Connecting Faith. My name is Joe Rathmanner. I'm in for Neil Stavem today. And today we're talking to Dr. Jim Burns. He's an author and speaker and executive director of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University. He's written several resources and books on marriage and family, and today we're talking about creating a more intimate marriage with your spouse on the heels of Valentine's Day. I thought this would be a great way to just talk about some practical ways to create intimacy within your marriage. And Jim, before we were out, we were talking a little bit about that child-centered season of life and that it's very easy to kind of slip into that as parents, where we focus more on our children and our days are more like a spreadsheet of who goes where and who brings someone and who makes a lunch and what child likes this kind of cheese and what child doesn't. And how in the world do we navigate creating intimacy in our marriage through that?
Hey, by the way, I think you described our life. Our kids are now older. Even the guy to cheese. I mean, when you get married, do you ever think that your kids are going to really care which type of cheese you put on their, you know, ham and cheese sandwich?
But they do. But they do.
Unbelievable. Yeah, well, sometimes even spouses do, too. So that's I had to learn the hard way. Well, you know, I think it goes back to the intentionality, Joe. And I think what it means is, for Kathy, she could put up with even some travel in my life. She could put up with kind of the craziness of our home with three daughters. But if she knew that she had my full attention on our date night, or if there were times when she knew, like, for example, Saturday mornings was a time where she wanted to sleep in, if she wanted to, you know, go for a walk, she wanted to go have coffee with somebody, I had the kids. And, of course, you know, it was a great time. We went and got fun food and, you know, when played a little bit. I didn't want to become the Disneyland dad that, you know, mom has to work all hard with our girls, and then, you know, dad comes in on Saturday and has this fun time. But I actually did some of that. But what we found is that when there are those key times that we can be looking forward to and really be intentional about not bringing up just kid issues when we're on a date. And for me, that meant I had to really work harder, and still do have to work hard, to make sure that the date isn't just when we get in the car and we're going to go get a quick bite to eat and we're really worried about finances or something. And so we kind of go, well, where do you want to go? I don't care. Where do you want to go? And then, you know, you do that thing. You know, it's the other day I called Kathy. We have our date night once a week. And I called Kathy and said, hey, I made a reservation at, and it was kind of a nicer place, not fancy, but kind of a little bit nicer. So I made a reservation. I've got it for this time. And she goes, oh, gosh, thank you for just even setting that up. So what we're finding is that if we'll go the extra mile and actually make something like that happen, and maybe even do something, you know, special during that time, don't just do the regular dates all the time. Kathy and I made a list one time of the 20 dates we'd like to do, and it was funny. None of them were, you know, go out to dinner and go to a movie. I mean, we do that. But for us, it was, you know, taking a walk on the beach, or we like to kayak where we live. And so, you know, we all of a sudden made some of those kinds of things our dates. Again, playing together, if you would. Mm-hmm. And sometimes doing it at a different, you know, time than just at night. But being creative with it and kind of having this list helped us. We just kind of then marked off the list. We go, oh, let's try this. Oh, let's try this. Let's try this. Oh, I have some friends right now who are taking swing dancing lessons.
Ooh, fun.
And I'm so nervous that Kathy, we're going to see him this weekend because we're doing a big Refreshing Your Marriage seminar with about 700 people. And they're going to be there. And I'm so afraid they're going to tell Kathy about that swing lesson because I think she'll want to do it. And I'm really bad at that, at the dance number. So
that would show your great love, though.
Yeah, she would like it until I step on her toes. Then I don't know. I'd be in trouble.
One of your assignments was to write out 25 things that you would like to do with your spouse. And that might make it so that you don't have to waste the first 15 minutes of your date figuring out where to go.
Right, exactly. You know, part of a good date, and I think with any couple, is kind of looking forward to the event, so to speak. And so when you know ahead of time what you're going to do, and sometimes it's neat to surprise your spouse, but, you know, when you know ahead of time, I know for Kathy and I, we look forward to it. And again, there are times when we just look forward to going to a quiet place and, you know, and just chatting. And when we were younger and didn't have, you know, we go, oh my gosh, you know, we don't want to go to McDonald's, but we can't afford something much higher. You know, for us, you know, sometimes an incredible walk in a park or whatever it might be, you know, might be a good thing. But again, it's keeping away from, you know, just the hustle and bustle of life. And you know, there are couples, incredible amount of couples who say, well, once we had kids, we never went out without our kids. And I think that's a sad commentary. And sometimes it takes a lot of work. You got to co-op by babysitting, or you figure out another way. But it can be done. People are going on dates who don't have a whole lot of money and don't have family in the area to, you know, watch their kids. And, you know, I think it's good for their kids too, because one of the most effective things you can do as a parent is actually show your kids that you like each other and that your marriage is a priority, or they're going to grow up thinking that, you know, the moon is hung on them, if that's a weird phrase, but that, you know, they're not going to know how to do relationships either. So part of our job is for them to see that, no, mom and dad aren't perfect, but mom and dad take time to be with each other. And amazing, you know, the homework still continues to get done, and life continues, and you know, mom and dad have a better relationship.
One of the things that, as a mom who's a planner, I'm a planner, I always write things out, make sure all the T's are crossed. And one of the things that shows my husband's great love for me is when he just plans something. When he says, hey, we're going out, I've got the sitter, here's where we're going, here's what we're doing, and what a gift that is. So if you're on one side or the other of your relationship, someone's usually a planner and someone's more spontaneous, that seems to be something that is just a great way to show your affection.
Hey, you know, you're exactly right, and it's interesting that I think you're so right about, you know, we were designed to be different. So, you know, Kathy is a planner, and I'm more the spontaneous one, I loved the planning. And then when we got married, the planning drove me nuts, because a planner sometimes won't be spontaneous. I come home and go, hey, let's go play tennis, and she's like, oh, I can't. I've got, you know, all these important things to do, and to me, they were, you know, bills and laundry and, you know, things that I didn't think were as important. But I've learned to realize that we are designed to be different. And I find, and you're exactly right, if I do something where I plan it, you know, with I know there, I'll say to people that I believe that we should also go away, you know, a couple times a year without the kids, even if it's for one night. But if I handle all the things that Kathy's going to be worried about, she's going to be worried about the kids. Okay, the kids are taken care of. We've got your mom coming. We have enough money for this. Here's, you know, all the details that she was going to be worried about. It just freed her up. And, you know, that was a big deal. Well, for me, that took a lot of work for her. That's just natural to her. She does that. But, you know, I've always felt like there was an extra kick in it because it was coming from the spontaneous one, not the planning one. And it seems like you felt the same way.
Absolutely. Well, it was just like what I was saying today, standing at the bus stop with my kids. It was showing my great love because they know what a wimp I am when it comes to the cold weather on my feet. And that shows your great love for Kathy because you're spending all that extra energy that is more difficult for you, right?
Yeah, it's not that I can't do it. It's that because it's more difficult, and sometimes I get lazy, spontaneous types, and we just expect our planner spouses to take care of it when, in fact, that's not a part of the deal. You know, this is not, you know, that they do all that part of the deal. You know, in terms of developing romance and relationship, I think it takes two to engage,
right.
And it takes two to make those things. And, you know, there are times when Kathy has carried me. There's times when I've carried her in a season of 38 years of marriage. And you know what? That's kind of how it is. You know,
right.
The Bible talks about mutually submitting to one another. And, you know, it's not really a 50-50 deal. Sometimes it's an 80-20 deal one way, and sometimes it's a 75-25 the other way.
Right. That's a great segue into, you write about communication style, that we're so different. And sometimes it's important to learn our spouse's communication style. Can you speak a little bit to that?
Oh, I think, you know, we have to be a student of our spouse all of life. And, you know, we are who we are partly because when we get married, you know, I always say that, you know, Kathy and I both came from pretty dysfunctional families. So we didn't know what normal was. And I had no idea how to, you know, communicate with Kathy at the beginning. And she had no idea really how to communicate with me because we were going in different directions. And finally, I was a youth pastor at a church at the time, and somebody did a seminar and they just taught us about communication styles. And, you know, we were one of, you know, 100 people sitting in that room. But for me, it was the aha. I went, you know what, I don't even understand Kathy's communication style or her love languages. You know, my love language was affirmation and hers was acts of service. And I would affirm Kathy a lot. And then I think, gosh, she doesn't really affirm me as much. But she sure does a lot of things for me. But I wish she said, you know, I'm cool and groovy more often. And then it dawned on me, that's not her love language. What I've got to do is acts of service. So in our family, honestly, this morning, she said, hey, wow, you folded the laundry this morning. I went, yeah, we've got 35 people coming over from our church tonight. And that's a big deal. She wants laundry folded. They'll not be in our bedroom. They'll never even see this. But for some reason, that's in her mind, it needs to be folded. So I just did it. I got all kinds of brownie points for that. You know, where it was because I knew what her love language was. But when it comes to communication, for Kathy and I, we don't do well on the spontaneous moments. Like our 10:30 or 11 o'clock at night in bed having a conversation about how we're going to pay the mortgage does not work. Mm-hmm. So we just said, look, we're going to both be ready at, you know, Friday mornings at 7. It's for us. I'm not telling everybody else to do this. But Friday mornings at 7, we have the ability to go to a Starbucks for most of an hour, and I've got a list and she's got a list, and we kind of go through our stuff. Kind of we don't run a business, but we call it a business meeting because we've got a daughter who's engaged. Last week when we did this, almost the entire time was talking about the engagement party that's at our house, and, you know, kind of just working through the business side, where sometimes that would be tension filled if it just sort of comes at night. But for us, we learned that for our communication styles, it's better to actually, you know, hold this meeting once a week. And there's times when I'll say, Kathy, she'll bring up something. I'll say, Kathy, can we do that on Friday? Or do you need to do that right now? There's times when she says, no, we need to talk about this right now. Other times she'll say, yeah, Friday's great. And we keep a list. Those are the little things that I think that help if we're being more proactive and intentional. But again, for most of us, we're just trying to get through Friday and then we have to do it all over again. And most people aren't thinking about being as intentional about creating intimacy in their marriage. And I think that's one of the reasons why so many couples lack that.
Great advice, Jim. We'd love to hear more about that. And also, we'd love to have you listeners join in on the conversation. If you'd like, please call 1-877-933-FAITH or 1-877-933-2484. Or just click on myfaithradio.com and you can send us an email instead. Back in a minute. Well, welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Rathmanner in for Neil Stavem today, and it's 32 past the hour, and we're talking to Dr. Jim Burns today about creating a more intimate marriage, something that can certainly be a challenge in this fast-paced world. And we'd love to have you join in on the conversation as well. You can call us at 1-877-93-FAITH or 1-877-933-2484. Or if you're not the talking type, but you want to email in a question, I totally understand. You can go to myfaithradio.com and just click on our show and you can submit your question that way. Jim, it's been great talking with you. And I'd love to just talk about bringing faith into our conversations as couples. How can we bring our faith into conversations about our family or about our marriage?
You know, Joe, I actually think this is the least developed area of most marriages, and I'm talking about even Christian marriages. I think there's reasons for it. We're too busy. We get distracted. If we have low-level bitterness and anger, and a lot of times, a lot of even fairly okay marriages have that. You know, we just don't lean into that. We get lazy. We get distracted. We don't want to do it late at night. You know, a million reasons. And yet I think this is one of the areas that we miss the most. And I'll tell you, kind of Kathy's in my story. We both, when we got married, we both were committed to ministry and committed to, at that point, we were in youth ministry and we were, discipling kids. And Kathy had the girls' Bible study and I had the guys. And, life was great. But we realized that we weren't growing together spiritually. And, I could disciple five guys and then come home and not really even want to have a spiritual conversation that much with Kathy, and struggling enough even in my own devotional life, and then we said we feel guilty, and so we'd say we'd go buy the big devotional book, the latest greatest, and there's some great ones out there. I mean, the Dobson's book and Rainey's and all the kind of well-known marriage people from our generation, and we'd read it for 4 days and go, this is great, and then we miss it for day or two, and then we'd read it again. We go, wow, this is great. And then we get frustrated with each other, or the kids would get in the way, or we were too tired. And next thing you know, that book is way low on the shelf and kind of gone. We were talking with some mentors of ours, great people who just their marriage, would just get us so motivated when we were with them, and yet they would never say they were even mentors on it because they had the same some of the same issues as anybody else has. I said, what do you guys do? And he's kind of a spiritual leader. It's a name that many people would know. And he said, well, we spend about 20 minutes a week. And he said, that's been really good for us. And I went, in my mind, I became judgmental and went, 20 minutes a week? My heavens, how wimpy. And then I went, what? Kathy and I at this point are not doing that. I mean, we're praying together at times. I mean, we're just not being proactive about anything else. As we get in the car, we'd had a great night. That was one part of a more involved conversation about a lot of stuff. And Kathy goes, I would really like that 20 minutes a week. Hmm. And what I realized was her heart was saying to me, I crave, some spiritual connection, spiritual intimacy with you, Jim. And I'm not looking for another Bible study, and I'm not looking for you to preach at me. I'm actually looking for us to do something together. Mm-hmm. So we made a commitment, Joe, for 20 minutes a week. And I know that sounds so spiritually wimpy, but we called it our closer time, and it actually has revolutionized the way we have done things. And I can't tell you that every closer time that we have is, life-changing. But that commitment to do that has been really neat. And for us, we take a scripture. We oftentimes, talk about that scripture. We pray for our kids, for each other, for, honestly, missionaries we serve, for our church, just all kind, just kind of the regular stuff. But just that connection time has been so good. And we ended up writing a book called Closer, and there are 52 devotions, and we challenge people to do 20 minutes a week. And what's amazing is we probably get more response to that little reaction to do the 20 minutes thing, and they say, this has been really good for us. But it's because it's intentional. And I always tell people, try to be intentional. And sometimes a wife will say, yeah, but my husband's not all that spiritual, or he's not going to do this, and he's supposed to do it. And I said, well, then fine, you do it. I mean, Kathy sometimes reads stuff to me. We're driving in the car. It doesn't have to be, you know, sitting with a, you know, lit candle in a dark room. And sometimes she'll read to me something that's inspirational. And then while we're driving, I do keep my eyes open, but we'll pray. And you know, I don't think that's the best way to do it, but there's times when we do it that way, and it's still, you know, it's still a really good thing. I call this discipline, and, you know, there's pain in life, but there's either the pain of discipline or the pain of regret. And I think for too many years, at least for us, and I think a lot of the couples, or, you know, folks who might even be your listeners too, is, you know, it's the pain of regret that we just don't do it, rather than the pain of discipline, just making it happen on a regular basis and not blaming anybody. Or there have been times when we've had these when we haven't been on the same page, and, you know, kind of out of duty, we do it. And funny that sometimes whatever we were bugged at each other about, or whatever was bothering us, you know, about other things, you know, kind of breaks away. And, you know, there's also a guy named David Stoop, who's a wonderful marriage therapist himself, well-known writer and whatnot. And he's in his 70s now, but he challenged us also, and he did this with a study from out of Cornell University that said people who pray together daily, and this could be a 15-second prayer, I'm not talking about, you know, long-time prayer, but people who pray together daily, of the people who get a divorce, about 1 out of 2, they say, but 1 out of 1,100 of people, if they're praying together on a daily basis. And, you know, Dave jokes as a therapist that says, you know, he said, I could go out of business as a counselor if just people would start praying together.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that takes away every problem, but I do think it really does build that intimacy. It's having faith conversations. It's doing what we were probably meant to do, and it's deep in our heart. One other thing, I realize I'm probably talking too much on this, but I'm so focused on it, and I just believe so much in it. Our good friends Gary and Barb Rosberg, who live up near you all, they live in Des Moines, Iowa, and they wrote a book called The 5 Sex Needs of Men and Women. You know, I write books like Creating an Intimate Marriage. They write sexy books. And the 4th sex need of a woman, so says Gary and Barb Rosberg, is spiritual intimacy. And, you know, it's not even on the top 50 list of men, let's be honest. But that's incredible. And I know my wife would agree that that's a very important part, that if she feels spiritually connected with me, then she feels connected in other ways and feels safer and whatnot. And there are times yet that she helps me grow spiritually. And she doesn't wait for me. If I'm being a dumb male and not thinking about it, she you know, reminds us that we're having some closer our closer time. She'll just spontaneously say, "Let's pray about it." Now because we're both, you know, Christian leaders, we tend to pray out loud together. But I tell people, even if you don't pray out loud together, you care about your kids, you care about certain facts. So just say, "Hey, could we just take a moment of silence?" If you know, a husband or a wife doesn't feel comfortable praying. But I think it breaks incredible barriers that keep us from being close to each other. And so I'm really big on this. I know I wrote on it in Creating an Intimate Marriage, and I talk about our vows and marriage and whatnot. But I think today I would probably spend more energy that way talking to couples, just because I see it working like crazy.
Well, and you had mentioned earlier that every person needs 8 to 10 meaningful touches in order to feel connected in their marriage. And if what I hear you say is correct, then those touches aren't all 8 to 10 physical touches, that there's physical touches, there are spiritual touches, there are emotional touches. And if we're truly wanting to be intimate with our spouses, then we need to learn what kind of touches that they need.
Oh, I want to tell you this, Joe, right now. I'm speaking on protecting your marriage on Saturday, and I'm going to quote that. And I'll quote you on Saturday, and then it
awesome.
Becomes mine on Sunday.
Okay.
That is so, Joe, that is so profound, because, you know, when we think about, you know, I was talking about touches, physical touch, but really the spiritual touch or the emotional connection obviously always precedes our physical intimacy anyway, but there's all these different kinds of touches. And, you know, it's just finding out what our spouse needs. And when we're looking into our spouse, you know, thinking about that, it changes the way we do marriage.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that I'd love to talk about when we come back is just talking about forgiveness, that when things aren't going right, how is it that we can approach our spouse and approach forgiving our spouse if maybe they've done something wrong or we've done something wrong? Love to talk a little bit more about that when we come back. And if you'd like to join in on the faith on the conversation as well, you can call 1-877-93-FAITH. 1-877-933-2484 or log into myfaithradio.com and just click on Connecting Faith. We will be right back. Well, welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Rathmanner, and today we're having a conversation with Dr. Jim Burns. Jim is president of Homeward and executive director of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University. And we're talking today about creating an intimate marriage, and it is a lot more difficult than it sounds, of course. It's going to take some daily work if I'm listening to Jim correctly. And Jim, one of the things that I was wondering about and really intrigued by in your book was the chapter on finding intimacy and freedom through forgiveness. Unfortunately, there seem to be times in everyone's marriage where we're not exactly perfect. I can't believe it, but it's true.
You're right. And you know, so many of us, again, have that least low-level anger or bitterness toward our spouse. And part of that is the freedom that you can find in forgiveness. And what I'm talking about is giving forgiveness, but also receiving forgiveness. We do mess up. We are people who are broken, and we have made small and large mistakes, and I frankly would call them sin. Sin means to miss the mark. We miss the mark. And yet a good marriage is based on forgiveness. And I know for myself, there are times when I will have no problem asking God to forgive me. You know, in the morning I do this little kind of acrostic that says acts, adoration, confession, thanksgiving, and supplication. I write it out in my journal. And, you know, so I'll ask God, today I did. I ask God to forgive me of specific, you know, sins that I've done. And then I'll have the arrogance to not forgive Kathy. And yet, you know, God is forgiving me. And I think God forgives me sometimes even when I don't say the words, because he's my Heavenly Father who loves me so much that he understands my motive or my ego or my heart. And yet for me, there's times when, you know, I've held resentment and bitterness and anger. Why would I do that when God doesn't do that to me? And so for me, it's a spiritual issue. But if a couple's trying to be intimate, meaning connected, they must work through the forgiveness factor. And you know, sometimes people have had some pretty rotten things done to them. And I'm not saying that they don't need work or that they don't get the wise counsel on their issues. They should. Probably for many of them, they must. But sometimes to punish our spouse because they did something silly is not going to make the marriage go deeper. Sometimes the depth of forgiveness. I know in my life there are times when Kathy has deeply forgiven me, and or I have deeply forgiven her, and you know that brings us together, not separates us. And at the same time, couples who you know continue to make you know silly mistakes or are incredibly poor moral decisions. You know, they've got to work through bigger issues than, you know, if somebody was crabby to them in the morning, if you know what I mean, Joe. I mean, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But forgiveness is critical. And again, I don't think enough people not only give forgiveness, but they don't receive it well either. And frankly, part of starting with forgiveness is just the power of an apology. And way too often, you know, we don't start with, I'm sorry, will you forgive me? We try to make excuses, or we get our defensive egos mixed up in it, when in fact, you know, I think some of the most profound ways of starting it would just be, you know, with our spouse looking in their eyes and saying, hey, I'm deeply sorry, you know, forgive me. And it could be something as small as I was really grumpy at you, or it could be some of the bigger things. I'm deeply sorry. Please forgive me. I want to restore this relationship. And then show them that the restoration can be in process because you're willing to work at it as well. Sometimes forgiveness comes immediately, and sometimes forgiveness is a slow process depending on what the problem or the issue is.
We have a phrase that we have in our family that I always am working with my boys on, which is we are a family that forgives. And it's so interesting to be teaching that lesson to kids and then know that we also need to learn that lesson as parents, as spouses. And yeah, it's kind of fun to watch that work in our children's lives and know that we also need to apply that to our own lives.
And you know what? Your children are going to you know, follow mom and dad. Right. So when they see you saying I'm sorry to them or to each other, they don't look at that as a weakness. They look at that as a strength, and they will then have more effective relationships as they, you know, move into, you know, adulthood, because, you know, they saw you have this, be a family of forgiveness. You are giving them an incredible gift.
Yeah, it's a great way to start a conversation with our children just about who God is and how we need to model what he does for us as
right.
well.
Right.
What are some other great ways to start faith conversations with our kids?
Well, you know, there's an interesting study out right now that a lot of us are talking about, and I know it gets on the radio, that and this is a scary one for the age of your kids, but 65% of kids from Christian homes will not be in church when they graduate from high school 3 months later. It's just it's a horrible statistic, and it's a stain in the world of youth and family ministry in the church. But there is a 300% better chance if they have faith conversations in the home. So it's kind of what we've been talking about. I think parents have to realize that it's not just the job of the church or a great children's ministry or youth ministry, but it's actually their job to develop faith conversations in the home. It's very biblical. It's out of Deuteronomy 6, 4 through 9, and where it says, we live it out, and then we impress it on our children. And so I think we have to find ways to do it. And it's not that we have, you know, heavy-duty Bible studies. That typically doesn't work. Some homes do that, and they do it so effectively. That was not our home. Our kids would have rebelled after about 15 minutes of dad giving 3 points and a poem and telling them what the Greek word was for something. No, not 15 minutes, about 5 minutes. But what we found is that if we had a regular time where we had these communications, and then Kathy and I would go away, and go away for us might mean we go to the park, but we'd spend some hours about every 6 months and write, what are the faith issues that we want to bring into our home during this time? You know, topics and issues. And then we'd look for spontaneous ways to do it. But for us, there was a family hour which focused more on having fun food and trying to laugh than it did deep spiritual input, because they were getting it from their youth groups and back earlier, you know, children's ministry. But we did that proactively, made it more conversational than, you know, one of us teaching, and then kind of more experiential, I guess is what you say. But also, you know, that was a time where we knew we were going, we have a place called Golden Spoon Yogurt around the corner from us, and they knew there was a Golden Spoon Yogurt run, you know, in the middle of that, and we tried to keep it a little bit light so that they would like it. It would be a memory. I mean, our kids still will say, hey, are we having, if when they're in the house, you know, we've got 20-somethings, but they'll say, hey, are we having what we called family time? And to them, that means we'll have a little bit of conversation about the Lord, and we'll go get Golden Spoon Yogurt.
Both good things.
Absolutely. And part of that is, you know, we want to, and that didn't start out that way, because we tried to be almost overly spiritual. I do not mean that in a negative way, because spirituality is good. But to be overly spiritual that our kids went, no, not family devotional time, you know, because they thought the word boring. And so all of a sudden, you know, we brought more fun food into it. Sometimes we'd do it outdoors. Sometimes we wouldn't do it sitting in the same place. And we didn't talk about tension issues. And that changed it. But then also Kathy and I realized that, as the Bible says, when you get up in the morning, when you go to bed at night, when you walk along the road, that's driving in our cars typically, or walking over to that bus stop for you, mm-hmm. you know, that's when sometimes it comes up. It's just the most natural ways, you know, for it, you know, to pop in and into a conversation. And we're doing it. So a lot of families are doing it. They just don't realize that they're doing it, and they probably want to be even more proactive.
Great advice. So it doesn't always take a specific, we're going to do devotions now time, but
yeah.
just to have no. general conversation.
Right. And it, you know, I think as a family, we do try to have some devotions, but I think it's more is caught than taught, and it's done, you know, in that other manner. At homeword.com, we have all kinds of free, great ideas. If you type in faith conversations or even devotionals, you know, we have free devotions. Homeward actually sends out a free devotion over 7 million times a year to people all over the world. And it's just a real short little thing that sometimes people can read to kind of get them going started with their family. So there's just all kinds of ways to do it. There's books out on it, loads of things that people can do. They don't feel like they have to know, be super spiritual themselves, or know, you know, the latest Greek and Hebrew. They just don't. They can just start, make it happen.
Excellent advice. We have a caller who has a comment. We have David on the line from Madison. David, what's your comment for Jim?
Hey, guys. I was just listening and hearing you talk about how you and your wife are both youth leaders in the church and had this going on and that going on, and that's literally like where I was at yesterday. I'm going to school full-time for ministry. I'm interning at our church. We're youth leaders, working full-time, just all this stuff, and thinking, how in the world can I lead my wife spiritually? How can we have time for that? And this 20 minutes a week thing is perfect. And I was literally praying last night, God, show me how I can do this. So
yeah,
just wanted to say that's awesome, and thank you.
Hey, that's neat, David, and that's how you start. You start small. Don't start large. Don't say we're going to do 2 hours a week or an hour a day. Start with 20 minutes a week, and it may even, you know, move over toward that. So I think that whole idea of just starting small, that's something that I, in my world, in terms of the world of national youth workers conventions and things like that, that's what Kathy and I talk about. And youth workers will often say, oh, we're so busy, but this has been helpful. It was just a small little piece. So keep it up. Sounds like you're doing great stuff for the kingdom, David. Way to go.
David, thanks so much for calling in. And we'll want you to hold. You can talk to Grace. And we also have a copy of Jim's book for you. So that'll be a great way to start even more conversations with your spouse as well. Jim, sometimes it can be difficult for those who are in ministry. What would you say to couples who, or even if just one spouse is in ministry, sometimes it kind of feels like work once you get home and then have to do more ministry with your spouse or with your children. What are some easy ways or maybe just some encouragement for those who feel like they are just strung out by the time they get home?
Yeah. Well, I think that is the case with people in ministry. I also think it's the case just in life because of our pace of life. And so, you know, I think, again, I don't think it, I call it KISS. Keep it short and simple. And just do it, but keep it short and simple and actually make it fun. I mean, no one said you have to grow spiritually. It always has to be tension-filled. So, you know, make it something, especially with your children, make it something that they enjoy. It's actually, you can actually, you know, talk about the Lord in a neat way while you're eating ice cream. I mean, it's really possible to do that. We don't do it enough, probably. I'm not suggesting that that's every time. We'd have some weight problems, probably. But I just am saying, you know, I mean, make it short and simple and enjoyable, where you've kind of popped into their life and you've popped out and they hardly knew that they were having a devotional. That makes it possible. And again, I'm not trying to sell spirituality short. I'm trying to say start small and then, you know, and then grow.
Great advice. How about things that distract us from marriage? Are there seasons of life or things that can distract us from really putting in the effort that is needed in order to create great communication within our marriage?
Sure. That's why we have to be intentional, because, and it's things we've already talked about. It's things like the child, you know, our children can distract us. I mean, God bless them. But one of the hardest times in a marriage is when you have your first child, because you were together. It was just the two of you and you could be more spontaneous. And now there's, you know, exhaustion tipping in. It's such a great joy to have a child. But sometimes the husband is saying, hey, wait, what about me? You know, because, the mom gets a little busy. And, you know, so sometimes good things, I call them attractive distractions. And, you know, children are, also work is, you know, I had somebody say to me one time, if the devil can't make you bad, he'll make you busy. And for me, the busyness has always been related to work type issues. And, you know, I think, even the Lord rested on the seventh day. I love that it said he rested and was refreshed, or the Hebrew says exhaled. So, you know, we've just got to put, you know, rest and to function long term. We just can't, you know, speed kills. We just keep living our life at that fast of a pace. In a book I wrote called Confident Parenting, I quote a study out of Harvard that says that this generation of kids, or your kids that you were walking to the bus stop today, 12 less free hours in a week than the previous generation. That's not good. So as parents, we have to be even proactive about, you know, cutting back a tad bit so that our kids can have some more of that rest and connection, and so that as couples we can do the same exact thing. So, you know, the distractions are typically, you know, the distractions of our life. I mean, it's our kids, it's our the attractive distraction. It's not usually that, you know, it's not, sometimes it is, but it's not always the inappropriate relationship or things like that. Now, if a couple has that, the safest road to physical and emotional intimacy is always the path of fidelity and purity. And so that's where we have to be careful in terms of, are we having emotional affairs, even beginning it? Am I dressed for not my spouse, but for a, you know, coworker or whatever it might be? If you see yourself sharing with somebody of the opposite sex something that you're not sharing with your spouse, then again, that's obviously a major distraction. And that's where you need accountability, and you just got to stop it. It won't move toward intimacy in your spouse with all the excuses we can make in our head.
Mm. Yes, that's a good point. If you're creating that spiritual intimacy with someone else, then that's taking that away from what you would be creating with your spouse.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, we have just about a minute left, Jim. I'd love to hear just your closing thoughts on just one practical thing that a spouse listening today can do to create a better relationship, a more intimate relationship with their spouse.
Well, Joe, I think it's been a great conversation. I would actually say, why don't we just start with the whole issue of, you know, attitude. We say in our house, attitude is everything. And maybe if you are a person who does some nagging, or if there's a lot of complaining or saying a lot of if onlys, then this would get better. Maybe today when you greet your spouse with what I call a 15-second kiss and tell them how special they are and how grateful you are for them. Maybe they're hard workers. Maybe they're something else. And in doing that, it doesn't change the marriage forever. It changes the marriage for that day because you were positive instead of negative.
All right, 15 seconds. That's a great advice. 15-second kiss from Jim Burns. Thanks for our great conversation today, Jim. You're listening to Connecting Faith.